Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I certainly think that we are at war with those who would commit terrorist attacks and who would corrupt the Islamic faith in the way that they do.
We have this idea of what it's like to live out the American dream, and maybe that's not God's dream for humanity.
Without what Jesus did at the cross, you cease to have Christianity. And if we cease to have Christianity, we are lost and damned in our sin.
Luther said, if the Lord had said, I will put forgiveness into this grass or in this dung, I would gladly go eat it. But he hasn't. He has said, take, eat, this is my body. Take, drink, this is my blood.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues Etc.
We often talk here on Issues Etc. about what our guest here in the first half hour of the program calls the usual journalistic confusion when it comes to these stories, these tragic stories, but the big stories of Islamic terrorism. We know the who, what, the when, the where, all of those facts are pretty good. Covering the facts of Islamic terrorism is not a huge problem for the media, but the media has a harder problem with the why, with the Islamic part of Islamic terrorism. They have a hard time putting those two things together, the religious angle on stories of Islamic terrorism. We're going to be talking about it here in the first half hour with Richard Osling, formerly of the Associated Press and Time magazine. Greetings, welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll also talk with him about what he's calling what many have called Cuomo Catholicism, that kind of cafeteria-style Catholicism, especially among our politicians. A little bit later in the program, Dr. Brian Grimm will join us, president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, to discuss Christianity and China's growing economy. We'll do a little sermon review, a sermon preached Sunday on the baptism of Jesus by Pastor Peter Bender of Peace Lutheran Church in Sussex, Wisconsin, a regular guest here on the program. We'll review one of his sermons a little later, nearer to hour two of Issues, etc. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us in hour two. We'll do our ordinary series with him, Christ in the Old Testament, the Lord calling Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 3. Now, our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line any time of day or night, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Before the program today, we had three lovely ladies stop in the studio, Rosie Adel, Rebecca Curtis was there, and Katie Schuerman. They're actually working on a book of essays by and for women, and I'm pretty sure that it will be one of the Issues Etc. books of the month in the near future. Look forward to that, by the way. Joining us to talk about media coverage of Islamic violence and Muslims, Richard Osling, a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine. He's recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Religion Newswires Newswriters Association, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Richard, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
You write recently about the usual journalistic confusion over how to characterize the religious aspect of stories involving Islam and violence. What do you mean by usual journalistic confusion?
Well, the news media have the same problem we see in the general political situation here in the United States, and that is how to characterize what we're dealing with here. It's often said Islam is a religion of peace, or that these terrorists do not represent Islam or are not Muslim, and so on. Actually, the situation is doubly complicated. In Get Religion, I cited an article in First Things magazine by John Azuma, who's a specialist in Islam at a Protestant seminary, Columbia Theological Seminary in Georgia. And he says he really covers both flanks, you might say. He disagrees with the liberal or left faction, where he says, quote, key aspects of the ideology of radical violent Muslim groups are indeed rooted in Islamic texts and history, unquote. On the other hand, he argues that it's too simple because in principle, Islam, the Quran, the Prophet Muhammad are not the real problem here. That is, the vast majority of Muslims do not countenance the kind of mayhem and trashing of civilians and putting young girls into sex slavery and all the rest of this activity we've seen over these years. It's, in other words, in that sense, it's not truly Islamic, or it's not part of the consensus or the center of the tradition as it's been followed over the centuries. Anyway, it's a very good article which tries to balance this. Of course, the problem in news writing is you're sort of in a sports writing mode, you know, A defeats B and so on. In other words, you have to sometimes oversimplify all of these cross currents. But certainly there's a lot of confusion in some of the journalistic commentary and some of the political commentary.
Is it that the journalist is kind of faced with a situation where he doesn't know as much about Islam as he ought to cover this story, and he is trying to at least convey what he can, well, maybe just kind of the what appears to be the fact that terrorist violence, even if Islam has some religious doctrines that contribute to it, is still an outlier. Is that what you're talking about here?
Yes, exactly. What we see today is an outlier, no doubt. It violates, it ignores the authorities established in the faith, and it violates very crystal clear teachings in the Quran and the Muslim tradition following up on the Quran. But it's also unavoidable that these activities are carried out explicitly in the name of God, as conceived by these particular Muslim groups. So there is an important Muslim aspect to this. Okay, so that raises two problems. The first is, I think sensitive journalists don't want to cast calumny unfairly on Islam as a religion, or to create unnecessary problems for Muslim citizens in the United States or other Western countries. And also, I think there's an instinct, and you see this, I think, in comments from the Obama administration and also the Bush administration. We don't want this set up as though the United States is against Islam in any sense, that this is a religious war that the USA is carrying out and so on. So I think all of those things cause people to be cautious in the wording that they use, but also if they push it too far, it can be misleading, because it's crystal clear that the U.S. and France and other Western countries are facing a religiously inspired insurrection, let's say, within a very large world faith.
So is the underexamined angle here that's kind of creeping in the background the battle for the soul of Islam?
Yes, I think you could say that. I mean, people, yeah, talk about a civil war and so on. I see it as a crisis of authority and leadership. It's very much like what the Catholic Church faced when the Protestant Reformation bubbled up starting in 1517. That is, who has the correct authority? What is the source of our teaching? Who do we obey? Who do we follow? Who is God, or who is the Savior Jesus Christ, and so on, in the Christian context? Now, Islam really has never undergone either the Protestant Reformation or the Catholic equivalents of bringing Catholicism into the modern era, with its very different understandings of human rights and democracy, not to mention the developments in technology and everything else. So in this sense, Islam has a huge amount of work to do. And in the struggle to do that, has, among other things, inspired a relatively small minority faction, which is very dangerous, very violent, and very frightening to Muslims, which is one reason I think you don't see more objections and more public outrage in the Muslim community against some of these things.
So two angles there that perhaps could be covered better. One, a general one, being that of, even as Islam thrives sometimes in a rather malignant way, depending on where you're covering it, there are, in fact, Muslims who are becoming former Muslims, being turned away from Islam toward other religions.
Yeah, that's right. And in Get Religion, I suggested to news people and other strategists that that's something they should really look at. Azuma's article in First Things magazine claims that there has been a serious turning away from Islamic tradition in Iran, a crucial country in all this we're talking about. And there's also in Iran and also elsewhere a notable turn toward Christianity. So some people are turning against all religion, becoming skeptics or atheists. Some exploring other religious options, but among the options being considered is Christianity. I mentioned a very interesting book on this. There's a Southern Baptist missionary named David Garrison who broke away for 3 years and traveled 250,000 miles all across the Muslim world and interviewed in detail 1,000 converts from Islam to Christianity. And the promotion for his book, which is titled A Wind in the House of Islam, claims that this is the greatest shift of Muslims toward Christianity in history. I by no means can say that that's true, but it's a bold and interesting assertion that I think deserves some attention by the news media.
Is there another angle, Richard, and that is, and you raised it there just a moment ago, in general answer to the, or looking for a general answer to the question, why aren't Western Muslims speaking out more strongly about radical Islam? Maybe just a reporter asking Muslims, are you afraid of Islamic violence?
Yes, I think that could be part of it. I might say that some political conservatives often will say nobody in the Muslim world is speaking out. That really is not true. I mean, you look at the reaction to the events in Paris, denounced by Muslim nation after Muslim nation and all kinds of authorities and the Islamic conference, and we could go on and on. And there have been a number of scholarly meetings in recent years really trying to distinguish between Islamic morality and such things as kidnapping, terrorism of civilians, trashing of churches, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think these definitions are extremely important. They are difficult. And it's obviously a difficulty within the Muslim community. I've discussed this with the leader of the Muslim congregation in my own town here, who I know. And it is a real plight. I think they feel uneasy about their standing in the United States and how people look at them. I mean, there haven't been any untoward incidents, but there's a lot of nervousness there. And they recognize that at least in many Muslim countries, if not here in the U.S., that speaking out against these new movements can be dangerous to your health.
Richard Osling is our guest. He's a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine. We're talking about Islamic violence and Muslims. When we come back, something he's written recently about Cuomo Catholicism. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, the Psalms, using modern English and new musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, the new Concordia Psalter. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, the 15th of January, we're talking about several issues regarding media coverage with Richard Osling, a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine, recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Religion News Writers Association, and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Richard, turning to something else that you've written on recently, that is so-called Cuomo Catholicism, especially with respect to a potential GOP presidential candidate, Jeb Bush. What is Cuomo Catholicism?
Yeah, that's a phrase that I believe originated with my friend Ken Briggs, the former religion writer for the New York Times. And it's basically what's often called cafeteria Catholicism. And the famous example is abortion. The Catholic Church, very precise and very opposed to the practice of abortion. Cuomo, in a famous speech at the University of Notre Dame, said he basically was personally opposed, so in his private life he would not procure an abortion or favor it, but as a political matter, it's a different question. So he felt as a politician, you know, as a leader of the state of New York in this case, hey, I can do this, you know, because this is the law or it's the will of the people or it's good public policy, whatever the church might have to say. Now, Jeb Bush is going to raise a Catholic issue as well, and that is that he is a convert, I think fairly famously a convert, in his case from the Episcopal Church to the Catholic Church, which is the faith of his wife. And as a Catholic, he has stated that his views on matters, particularly immigration, are influenced by his faith. It's not that, you know, he's a knee-jerk follower of everything the U.S. Bishops' Conference might pronounce, but Catholics have a fairly liberal view on immigration generally, and certainly the hierarchy has taken what conservative Republicans would call a liberal and ill-advised stand and so on. So that puts Bush to the left of a number of the other possible presidential candidates. And there are probably other issues on which he would agree with the more conservative stands of the Catholic Church, particularly on abortion. And I would assume on same-sex marriage as well. We'll have to see how that plays out. But in other words, in both cases, with Mario Cuomo and with Jeb Bush, we have the issue of how a Catholic should be influenced by the tenets of his own faith carried into the general population, which is only in the United States a quarter Catholic.
This, I was going to say, you know, this kind of has been, Cuomo Catholicism has been such a phenomenon in the Democratic Party. It's hard to name a prominent Roman Catholic in the Democratic Party, just off the top of my head, I should say, that doesn't engage in some form of Cuomo Catholicism. But it sounds like what you're saying here is now that form of Catholicism may be taking on a more prominent role in the Republican Party.
Yes, for sure. In fact, well, let's look back. The late Governor Casey of Pennsylvania, whose son is now in the Senate, I'd say he was kind of the last of that breed of old-fashioned Catholics who were loyal to the church, followed its teachings, and were well-respected political leaders. Very famously, Casey was prevented from speaking at the Democratic National Convention, precisely because the abortion issue was so controversial and difficult for the party. You know, so yeah, there's actually quite a long history here. Now, Bush is interesting because if nominated, he would be the first Catholic nominee for president of the Republican Party, which was fused with Protestant America for a century, just as Catholics were very loyal to the Democratic Party till recent decades. Also, Paul Ryan, who's Catholic, just bowed out. Chris Christie is another Catholic who could be running for president. And again, he would be the first Catholic nominee by the Republican Party.
How did the media cover this issue with Roman Catholic, the late John F. Kennedy, while he was running and while he was serving as president?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you look back. Kennedy gave a famous address to the ministers of Houston, Texas, essentially Protestants, during the campaign. And he laid out a very rigid line of church-state separation in which he pretty much said public office holders should not express influence of their religious body. Now, this is a stand he basically had to take because that was what Protestants demanded of him back in 1960. Since then, we've had the rise of conservative Protestant activists, aroused especially by the abortion issue, and they would reject that. I mean, they would say, hey, your religion should have an influence on what you're having to say. So I think Protestant thinking, especially evangelical Protestant thinking, has really turned inside out since Kennedy's election in 1960. Of course, the first Catholic to run was Al Smith, 1928, and he was vanquished easily by Herbert Hoover for the Republicans. I might mention John Green, University of Akron, who may be the single best political scientist who looks at this kind of thing, made an interesting point to me in an interview many years ago. I've never forgotten it. He said the simple look at this is, oh, the Democratic Party moved to embrace abortion, so therefore Catholics who oppose abortion or their church opposes it are turning more against the Catholics and are voting more Republican. He said that's too simple, but here's what actually happened. The move on abortion in secular America and thus embraced by the Democratic Party, but opposed generally by the Republican Party, had the following effect. It uncoupled Catholic sentiment from the Democratic Party so that if they wanted to vote Republican on some issue other than abortion, they felt free to do so. In other words, it freed up Catholics to contemplate the Republican Party.
And did I hear you say just a moment ago that, you know, at the time of John F. Kennedy, Protestants were demanding that Kennedy, in a sense, distance himself from Catholic authority, whereas now Protestants have done a complete flip-flop and are decrying the fact that Roman Catholic politicians are distancing themselves from Catholic authority?
Yes, that's a pretty good summary of a complicated story. Now, to be fair to the Protestants changing sides, you might say, keep in mind in 1960, the Catholic Church's Second Vatican Council had not occurred. And until 1965, there was a feeling abroad in the Catholic Church that you could sort of impose Catholic teachings at a fairly high level on the body politic in ways that Protestants found offensive, and especially in Latin America. Now, in 1965, the Church, under American influence, I might say, embraced a new understanding of religious liberty, in which faith and political views should be distinguished to some extent, and the Church should not throw its weight around in order to impose beliefs on people of other religions. It's a whole complicated business, but we just have a totally different situation in terms of political theory in the Catholic Church today, and the Protestants have adjusted to that as a result.
Finally, what do you make of the recent coverage of Jeb Bush with regard to his, I think the coverage covered kind of, here is a Catholic who has backed off somewhat on his previous position on same-sex marriage. The governor, a former governor, has said that we ought to recognize the legality of same-sex marriage where it's legal, and we ought to simply recognize the right of people to engage in those kind of unions as they see fit. A noticeable shift away from his previous position. How do you think the coverage was of that?
Well, I think that the press has done a fairly good job on what is really a difficult issue. I think Bush is just looking realistically not at what he might prefer for the United States, but at what is in fact occurring, largely by judicial fiat rather than democratic decision by state legislatures or statewide referendums or action by the United States Congress, for that matter. And I would expect that when all is said and done, the Republican candidate, whoever it is, in 2016, is going to be somewhat similar to that. You know, that would be my guess.
Richard Ossling is a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine. He's a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Religion News Writers Association, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Richard, thank you very much for your time.
Good to be with you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Brian Grimm, president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, talking about Christianity and its influence on China's economy. Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
producing 10 hours of live talk radio every week from a 500-square-foot office in Collinsville, Illinois, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoota, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.